the scheduled subjects for these summer months. We're studying out of 2 Peter chapter 1, what we normally call the seven Christian graces. We've already sort of given an overview to the chapter in the first lesson, and then we talked about diligence, which is mentioned before the seven and after the seven, and had a lesson on personal effort. And last week's lesson was on the subject of faith. Of course, next week, knowledge. I will be in a gospel meeting next week, and Brother Jack Hilliard, who is an excellent teacher, was going to fill in next week and teach on the subject of knowledge. He asked a few minutes ago, his wife was with him, and he asked if I thought he could get enough knowledge between now and next week, and I told him I thought if she helped him that he could. And then after that, of course, we have VBS and CTS, but on down the line, and the last two lessons will be sort of summary lessons, the end results of what these will help us do, and then the sources of where we find help to help us to accomplish what we need to in this kind of growth. Last week, as we talked about the subject of faith, I suggested to you that there are different ways in which we can look at what's involved here, and I'm not for sure that either one of these three ways completely explains what's taking place or what's involved, but I think maybe all three of them have something to say. There are those who think that faith is really one of eight graces or eight concepts here, and would suggest that all of them grow along with each other, and I think there's a sense in which they definitely grow. Faith doesn't cease to grow. And someone mentioned something last week after a service that I had read in one commentary, that if you put faith, you have eight. And Brother James, in music, eight makes what? An octave, which is complete section. And someone had suggested that that makes a complete section. I think it does in a sense, and so there's a sense in which they all grow. Another way to look at the chapter is that faith is the foundation, and out of the foundation all seven of these grow. And that comes pretty near expressing what I believe is in the chapter, except you might get the idea from that faith ceases, that you come to a point that you have the foundation and then all of these others grow out of it. And does faith ever cease, or the process of faith? Last week, as we were talking about faith, we talked about a historical faith, a system of faith, the faith, and then we talked about an active faith. And true faith is always active. By faith, Abraham, by faith, Noah, by faith, Moses, by faith, Cain. And then the last one is that each one grows out of the other. And there is a sense in which this is suggested: in your faith, supply virtue, and in your virtue, supply knowledge. And perhaps there is a sense in which each one of these grows out of the other, but I don't think it's limited to that. I don't believe that only virtue grows out of faith and that knowledge only grows out of virtue and so on. So I'm not for sure that either of these three ways expresses the idea, but if we look at all three of them, there's a sense in which all eight concepts continue to grow. There's a sense in which the seven that we call the Christian graces grow out of faith, and there's a sense in which each one of them sort of builds on the other. Last week, as we talked about the subject of faith, toward the end of the class, I put this transparency on and had intended to spend more time than we had time to spend on degrees of faith, and we've sort of ran over this, and let me suggest if any of you any time would like a copy of this, this makes a good sermon outline. I haven't preached it in a long time, but I think it does has the potential to be a good sermon outline. But we talked about those who are below zero, no faith, 0 degree faith, nothing, 32 degrees or below, frozen up, 70 degree faith, enough to be comfortable, 212 degree faith, boiling over for the Lord. And emphasized in that our faith needs to grow, that we need to continue to improve and increase in our faith as we go along. Now tonight, we're talking about the subject of virtue. I spent some time today and went back sort of like I did last week and checked different translations on this word virtue. I find that that's interesting sometimes, to just look at all the different translations. Now, I know that we have our preferences as far as translations are concerned. I hope all of us understand that there is not a perfect translation. Some may be better than others. The approach that's taken in some translations is certainly better than others. There are some that have problems that really concern us, but I find that it is helpful to me not only to go to commentaries and read what people have said, but to look at all the different translations. If people have put enough time to translate the entire Bible, they're bound to put some time to thinking. and many times it is helpful to me. Here are some of the words and phrases that I found in the different translations on this passage, and I thought just looking at these might help us to begin to have a little understanding at first, maybe a little better understanding, of what's involved in this word virtue. Resolution. We usually talk about that subject at what time of the year? December, first of the year. Manliness. And that isn't intended to suggest that any difference between man and woman at this point. Maybe I ought to put under that womanless. Womanness. How would it? let's back up and forget that, okay? But this is used in the sense of the human race. I get my tongue tangled around my eye tooth sometimes and can't see what I'm saying. But manliness. Another one that was interesting was goodness. And then another one was goodness of life. And I think we tend, probably, when looking at the word virtue, to tie this concept with it more than we do manliness. Then after that, moral excellence. In the last several years, as I've heard people speak at Fried Hardeman, back when Brother Gardner was president, and since he's been gone and Brother Sewell is president, I've heard the word excellence used, Brother Gardner, many times. When we're talking about education, we're talking about something of excellence. And I think it's important for us to look at this idea as being involved with virtue. Moral excellence. Moral character. Moral character. Character is what we are. Reputation is what people think we are. Are they always the same? Not necessarily. But what we really are is what matters. Moral character. And then noble character. Noble character. When you think of nobility in the Bible, who comes to mind almost immediately? All right. If I ask 100 people, I'll probably get 100 different answers on that, wouldn't it? These were more noble than those in Thessalonica. You remember the Bereans? What did they do? First, they received the word with readiness of mind or an open mind, and then they searched the Scriptures daily, didn't they? I always think of that passage when I think of nobility. And then I decided I wanted to look at the Living Bible paraphrased, which is not a translation. A fellow by the name of Taylor, as I understand, put that together especially for the benefit of his son. And he had it, work hard to be good. Does that sort of fit in with what we've been emphasizing in the class so far? The one thing that I've tried to emphasize every night is that who has the responsibility to learn for you? Who's going to have to learn if you learn? You are. And especially that statement there that add to your faith. Remember what we said the subject of add is there? You add to whose faith? To your faith. And it takes some work. Work hard to be good. We have four children. Neither one of them was just automatically good. In fact, I'm not for sure they always turned out just exactly like I wanted when they said they were working hard. But they had to put forth some effort, and I had to help them sometimes just a little bit with the effort. Work hard to be good. And then, though I didn't find but one or two versions that used this word, I think this last word is the word that I have used in my study and in my thinking as much as any to sort of be a synonym to virtue. I'm not for sure that you would always see it listed as a synonym in the dictionary. But I believe when we look at everything that is said, not only in this chapter but in other places, that we begin to see that virtue involves more than just morality. That it involves more than just being good. A person can be good in some ways and never do very much. Can sit down and never get into any trouble, but they don't do anything as far as productivity is concerned. But these are some of the ideas, at least, that I believe are associated with this concept of virtue. Resolution, manliness, goodness, goodness of life, moral excellence, moral character, noble character, work hard to be good, and courage. Now, having looked at that, what I want us to do next is to look at some passages of Scripture where the word is used and the idea is there and see if these will help us. First, right in the same chapter, look back at verse 3. They're in 2 Peter chapter 1. In In verse 3, according as his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue. And I would guess that some of you are reading from a version that says called us by his glory and virtue, or by something. Who has one like that? David, you? What? By glory and virtue. And it appears that the technical translation probably is better with that translation than what I read, that it's emphasizing God's virtue on this point. And if it is, then when you stop and think about it, this is the verse that says God has given us what? All things that pertain to life and godliness. That's basically saying he's given us all that we need, right? And how has he done that? He's done it by his glory and virtue. Would it include courage on his part? Effort on his part? So I think when we think of virtue being used to describe God here, and I believe there's at least another place that we'll notice in a moment that probably it has reference to him more than to man, that it helps us to see that he's talking about what is necessary to accomplish the end result. And for us, that emphasizes the idea of courage. But now I want you to go back to the Old Testament for a moment, to Proverbs chapter 31. And just the mention of that ought to call your attention to the idea of virtue. How does Proverbs 31:10 start? Who can find a virtuous woman? Do any of you have a translation you're reading from tonight that translates the word virtue there different? Who can find a worthy woman? All right. You know, if you just took the time to go down through the next few verses and look at the description of this woman, I think if we didn't do anything else tonight except study the description of the woman in Proverbs 31, that we'd have a pretty good idea of what's involved in virtue. Notice her relationship to her family. Verse 12 says what about her husband? She will do him good. But verse 11 tells us the attitude that her husband has toward her. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her so that he shall have no need of spoil. Later on, over in the latter part of this, it talks about her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her, verse 28. And what's the verse? Is it the last one that talks, well, her praise is in the gates, but there's a verse that talks about her, verse 23. Her husband is known where? In the gate. What do you see about this woman as far as her family was concerned? She was concerned about her family, and she put forth effort to try to take care of her family, didn't she? But I want you to look at what's said in all of these passages about her effort to work. She even had the idea of being a merchant. She would buy things and sell them. I like it down about verse 19. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. She reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of the snow. We usually use the hands to be a symbol of what? Work, labor, service. Look how many times the word hands are used in this. We were talking about her family a few minutes ago. Not only was she concerned about her family, but what about those who worked for her, those who were maybe even servants in the household or at least served her and her family? Was she concerned about them? Put forth effort as far as they were concerned. Where it says she's not afraid of the snow, what does that suggest? She not only put forth effort when things were going well, but what? When there were difficult times in the way, right? And I believe this word virtue, when it comes to our growth as Christians, carries with it that idea also, that we're not to be afraid, that we're to be ready to have the courage that is needed to do whatever we can do and need to do in the Lord's service. It would be interesting just to read this entire chapter. I'm not going to take the time to do that. But I like verse 13. She seeketh wool and flax, and here's the part that I really like. She worketh, what's that next word? Willingly. She worketh willingly. A few minutes ago I said, whose faith are we talking about? Whose work are we talking about? Yours, your own. There's a passage in 2 Corinthians 8:12. It says, if there first be a willing mind, can you finish that one? It is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. But what do you say you need first? A willing mind. That's involved in the courage that we're talking about here, the moral goodness that we're talking about. While we are in Proverbs, back up to the 12th chapter just a moment. We need to understand that this is not just one woman that's being talked about here in 31. And I think Proverbs 12:4 emphasizes this also. A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband, but she that maketh ashamed is as rottenness in his bones. Now, for the sake of you women, let's discuss the first part of that verse. A virtuous woman is what? A crown to her husband. A virtuous woman. So Proverbs 31 is not the only place that a virtuous woman is talked about. In fact, turn back to the little book of Ruth. Ruth chapter 3, verse 11. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. Who's he talking about there? Ruth, isn't he? And when you read the little book of Ruth, the four chapters there, you see a woman with moral goodness, but what else do you see with Ruth? Some work, some effort, some industry. In this case, she was one of those that would have almost been on welfare, as we talk about today. But as there was an opportunity to do something, to get something for her and her mother-in-law, what did she do? She went out looking for the opportunity and took advantage of the opportunities. Of course, her opportunities were magnified as she went along, more than just the grain, weren't they? But we have the virtuous woman of Proverbs 31. We have the virtuous woman in more general sense in Proverbs chapter 12. And we have Ruth called a virtuous woman in Ruth 3 and verse 11. I think it's interesting just to look. If you just discussed and looked at the life of Ruth, you'd have a pretty good description of a virtuous person. I think it helps us to understand virtue. But now I want you to turn to Philippians chapter 4, back to the New Testament. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Philippians 4, verse 8. This is the passage that tells us the things on which we are to think. But before we read those that we're to use to occupy our thinking process, look at the latter part of the verse. If there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Here again, do any of you have a version that translates virtue different there? Excellence? Okay. Goes back to our word again, doesn't it? Praiseworthy? Okay. I like that word excellence. That says something, doesn't it? That word excellent really says something about virtue. If there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Now, we've been emphasizing in all these lessons the idea of personal growth and how each one of us has to put forth an effort on that. Perhaps right here is one of the best recipes we'll find for that. If there be any virtue, think on these things. What are these things? Six of them, aren't there? Look at them for a moment. Whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, of good report. How would you like to have all your neighbors that had those six qualities? Be sure that your neighbor's neighbor has those six qualities. You may not be able to control all of your neighbors, but can you control your neighbor's neighbor? Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, that's almost saying the same thing again, isn't it? True, honest. Whatsoever things are just. What's another word that would say about the same thing as just? Fair? I found that being fair with people is one of the most important things, especially with young people. I have the opportunity to teach our teenage classes one quarter each year, 7th and 8th grade one quarter, 9th and 10th grade one quarter, 11th and 12th. That's one of the highlights of my work, is working with those young people in those classes. And I have found that one thing that means more to in our relationship in those classes is fairness. If you try to drive something to a young person and get a point across and he perceives that you're trying to be one-sided and just look at that one thing, he's going to put up a rebellion, is he? And it's not just young people, is it, Milton? It's all of us to that extent. When you perceive that somebody is being fair with you, and a part of that is being willing to listen as well as talk. And if Judy were in here, she'd be nodding her head. And I'd know what she meant. But true and honest and just, what's that next one? Pure. Now there's the one that I think we normally tie to virtue. We think of virtue in the sense of purity. What's the next one? Lovely. Lovely. You like people who are lovely? Can we as men be lovely? Now, work at it a little harder, Miss Iola. But surely we can. I know some people that, some men that are just lovely in their approach and their personality. All of us can be. And if then he says, whatsoever things are of good report. Virtue, goodness, good report. These things are tied together. I think these are some of the passages where the word virtue is used that helps us to have a little bit better understanding of what's involved in this word virtue. Now, sort of as a summary tonight, I want to suggest that there are three things that we're going to have to do in order to really develop and have the virtue that we're talking about. And when the class is over, I believe you can remember these three things. In fact, just say them with me. Grow up, speak up, and stand up. In fact, several years ago, I was conducting a meeting down in Tarpon Springs, Florida, which is close to Tampa. And I don't know why I remembered this. I don't remember much that people say sometimes, but this one fellow came in one night, and he said, I really like the way you preach. And I was feeling good until he'd explained what he meant. He said, you stand up, you speak up, and you shut up. Two-thirds of the way through, I was feeling fine. But we've got to learn to grow up and speak up and stand up. Just think about some of those passages that are there for a moment. I think some of them we could even quote. 1 Corinthians 13:11, when I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. Now, before you get too much out of that verse, turn to the next chapter and look at verse 14, verse 20. And he says, in understanding, be ye what? Men, but in malice be what? Children. Before you get the idea that we need to grow out of all childlike characteristics, read that verse. There are two words that are almost alike when we look at them, and they are almost opposite when we understand them. One is childish, and one is childlike. Do we need to be childlike? Do we need to be childish? No, we need to grow out of the childish attitude and be like men in that sense. But there are some characteristics. One of the characteristics that I see with children that we need so much as adults is forgiveness. You can have two little children fighting like banty roosters. Any of you know that don't know what I mean by a banty rooster? If you haven't had any bannies, you have been deprived. Fighting like banty roosters, and 5 minutes later, what about them? They're playing together again, and they've forgotten it. You let some of us get into it, and 6 months later, I'm not going to speak to him. There are some childlike characteristics that ought never to change. But there are some childish characteristics that ought to change. 1 Corinthians 16:13, those two verses, that one and the next one, list what we sometimes call the five great duties of Christian life. And one of them is, quit ye like men. That's the King James Version. Who knows what that word quit means? A lot of us quit all right. Some of you may have a version that says behave. Behave or act like men. Behave like a man. Have you ever had anybody tell you you're behaving like a child? All of you could nod your head. You just don't want to admit it. Okay, grow up. Quit ye like men. Hebrews 5:12-14 is the one that says, give some of the adults bottles. When by reason of time you ought to be teachers, you have need that someone teach you again, which be the first principles, the oracles of God, and have need of milk and not of meat. I've got a sermon outline entitled, Give Him a Bottle. And that's what some of us need, is a bottle. Grow up. I think that's what virtue is involved. As we get older, we need to have more strength and more courage. Grow up. Number two, what? Speak up. I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God and the salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. But if we are not careful, sometimes we'll allow ourselves to walk away from an opportunity to defend the truth. There may be times that we need to walk away from some things and give time for things to develop. But when we have an opportunity to speak up for Christ, do we take that opportunity? Maybe someone's discussing something religiously. I was present the other day, Brother Will Coxon, out working with the Lions Club. And some of the members that are in the Lions Club with Brother Jess and me are not members of the church, and they were sitting there talking about religion. And they left an opportunity open for me to say something. What should I have done? I didn't preach them a sermon. I didn't think they wanted that right then. But I just made a comment or two and you're not going to believe this, in a low, soft voice. And I think I got a point across. Speak up when we have an opportunity. John 12:42-43, there were many who believed on him, but they would not confess him, lest they be put out of the synagogue. And then 43 says they loved what? Praise of men more than the praise of God? They believed on him, but they wouldn't speak up. How many people you think are like that today? Acts 4:18-20. I want you to turn to that passage. Acts 4:18-20. They told them not to say any more. They commanded them. They called them, verse 18, Acts 4, they called them and commanded them not to speak at all, nor teach in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John answered and said unto them, whether it be right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge ye, for we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. We just can't keep from it. Which prophet was it said that the gospel burned in him? Was it Jeremiah? Jeremiah that said he decided he wasn't going to speak anymore, but he said it just burned in his heart so much he couldn't keep from it. The more we put into the heart the right thing, the more we're going to want to speak the right thing. So speak up, and then stand up. James 1:6-8 says, verse 8 says, a double-minded man is unstable in his ways. Verse 6 says that a fellow is like a wave of the sea, what? Driven by the wind and tossed. anybody's dog that'll go hunting with them. Write an article today saying one thing and tomorrow the next something else. He said the one who's going to be for Christ is one who's going to what? He's going to stand firm. Stand firm. 4:7-8 is the one that says resist the devil and what? He will flee from you. That's standing up. What happened to the devil when Christ resisted him with Scripture? He left him for a season at least, didn't he? 1 Corinthians 16:13 is a passage that says, stand fast in the what? Faith. Stand fast. That means just take a stand. Acts 5:41. They counted it an honor to be worthy to suffer for the cause of Christ. And I want us to turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6 for just a moment. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Verses 11 and 12. I want you to see four words. I'm reading from the King James, four words that begin with the letter L. Flee, follow, or three words that begin with the letter F, and then another one. Flee, follow, fight, and lay hold. What does he say we're going to need to do in order to lay hold? Flee, follow, and fight. And that fight is in the area that we're talking about Christian growth. Remember we said that we're talking about a Christian's growth here in 2 Peter chapter 1. So what three things have we said tonight that we really need to do in order to grow in virtue? Grow up, speak up, stand up, and I'll shut up.